There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Good morning. It is Tuesday. This is the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are live here in the Kia Studios, Mike.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Bo and Tiff hanging out here with you on a day in which the Falcons continue to sit pretty in the NFC South in their division. And a not-so-great day for some of their division foes who are waking up this morning. If you live in Atlanta, I want to admit that you're a Saints or a Buccaneers fan.
Well, unfortunately, Saints fans are very open about their fandom, so I'm sure they'll all admit it, although they'll try to run their mouth. And this is when Saints fans fall back on, well, we have a Super Bowl. And well, they can, because they do, and we don't. But
that's so long ago at this point, though.
I
was in college.
Boy, it was a long time then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, if you didn't see the news then, as Bo was getting to, the Saints have fired their head coach in Dennis Allen. That came out yesterday. So the team's special teams coordinator, Darren Rizzi, was named the interim head coach.
Yeah, I was sad to see Dennis Allen fired. I think he's a mediocre coach, and I wanted the team to stick in mediocrity. He's a mediocre head coach. I mean, he's... Tiffany, his head coaching record is like 20 games under 500.
I know you don't know the man. I know he's probably not listening this morning, but I'm like, dude, man just lost his job.
Well, I mean, he should have had control over his team last year when he was running up the score on us. I have no love loss here. He's not Sean Payton, but he was a Saints coach.
He's a pseudo Sean Payton. Hey, you know what's funny about what you just said is last year, in the moment when that happened with the fake quarterback sneak touchdown at the end of the game, I don't know that I've ever, as a Falcons fan, seen red the way I did when that happened, right? And I remember being like, dude, And I think I fired off a tweet, said something like, Dennis Allen will be the one getting fired a year from now. Arthur Smith probably won't survive today, but Dennis Allen will be the one getting fired a year from now. And then you know what? Dennis Allen, I don't even think, realized what happened. To your point, he doesn't realize what happened. He goes to the podium, and they're like, well, you know, Arthur Smith was mad, and Dennis Allen said he should be mad. Like, yeah. He has every right to be mad. And I kind of backed off from my stance on Dennis Allen at that point in terms of, hey, this guy ain't going to make it another year. But you guys have been around him, and you've been around NFL circles enough to know that when a backup quarterback and a backup running back go rogue and decide that they're going to go against the wishes of everybody on the staff and put one in the end zone, it's not a good sign. And Jameis Winston didn't end up back in New Orleans. And now Dennis Allen, as part of that debacle, is no longer there either. So I never wish for anybody to lose their job, and I want to make that clear. Dennis Allen, though, was not able to get it done. You look at the free fall that they're in, and I think for them it feels a lot like it did when we lost to Carolina last year in December. It just felt like, how could we let this happen?
Yeah, look, there's no doubt that injuries had a lot to do with it, but that's not everything. I mean, you see that Tampa is still fighting and competing with injuries, and I just think losing, getting 51 dropped on you by Tampa, 4 weeks ago, and then continuing to lose, and then going into Carolina and losing. Bryce Young's won 3 NFL games, one against us as a starter, one against New Orleans now, and I couldn't tell you who the other one is against, but I'll say this. Dennis Allen got that job because he helped turn New Orleans around at the end of the Sean Payton era. And we can argue that all you want, but he turned their defense into a good defense as the defensive coordinator. But the track record of him as a head coach is not very good.
Yeah.
And you can blame it, as Michael Thomas is doing on Twitter, on Derek Carr, which I don't necessarily do. But I don't think it's all on Derek Carr. But that's the reality of the situation. I don't like anyone seeing. I'm not a fire the coach guy. I think I've been very open about I'm not that guy. And I would have been fine with Dennis Allen being the head coach there for another 10 years.
Yeah. It is interesting, too, when you look at the way they played the first couple of weeks, right? You would have never imagined that they would hit this skid and that he would be. He's the first head coach fired this year, right? I think he is.
I think he is.
So that's that. You get an early jumping off point, and being able to kind of figure out where you want to go and the direction you want to go. Look, Sean Payton era transitioned into the Dennis Allen era, and now things are going to look a lot different for New Orleans next year, in my opinion, because it's not going to be from within unless something crazy happens.
Well, that's actually the surprise thing for me. Because I think maybe the lusters came off Kubiak after the first 3 or 4 games, because that was a thing early. It's like, hey, man,
Robert Saleh. Sorry. Yeah, sorry
about that. Yeah, I forgot about Saleh. That was another one that was kind of inevitable. But you kind of go to the fact that Kubiak was this bright star the first 3 or 4 games, and now he didn't even get the interim job. I was kind of surprised they didn't give him the interim job to see if he could turn this thing around a little bit. And maybe they handed it to him, but I do think maybe it's time for a hard reset. And I wonder if they hard reset everything now, because their cap situation is a debacle. It might be, I don't think Mickey Loomis is necessarily going to step away, because I think he's a very good GM. Mm-hmm. But it might be time for a hard reset and just redo the cap, go ahead and take it on the chin for a couple of years, like Atlanta had to do when they were in the similar situation. And then Let's reset this thing.
Mm-hmm.
This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured? Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. All right, we'll get back to the Saints later on. How about the Buccaneers in Monday Night Football as they took on the Kansas City Chiefs and took them into overtime, where they ended up losing 30-24. Kansas City remains undefeated, but the big talk around all this game now is the call. Or the call that didn't happen to go for 2 once the Buccaneers were able to get within 1 with about 27 seconds left in regulation to try to tie the game up with the Chiefs. So instead, they elected to kick the field goal. They tie the game. It goes to overtime. But people are wondering why Coach Todd Bowles did not elect to go for 2 and try to just win the game outright. And I think there's a picture And also, in watching the game, you could see Baker Mayfield's reaction when the Chiefs get the ball in overtime. He's like, oh, no, because you know what Patrick Mahomes does in those situations. So with that being said, you might be wondering, why didn't he go for two to try to win that, given it's the Chiefs and that's what they do?
What would y'all have done?
I probably would have gone for two.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Knowing where I was at in the season, you're banged up. I mean, Jalen McMillan didn't even play last night. You were essentially without your three top receivers. So I think going for two probably would have been it. I think Todd Bowles has done a phenomenal. You got like guys that did not have a good first head coaching job.
Yeah.
And then got to go somewhere, kind of reset as a DC, a lot like Dennis Allen, but then took advantage of what he's done. I think Todd Bowles is that guy. So I'm not going to sit here and crush him for it, but it might have been the difference in their season going for two and not.
Here's his explanation.
Very minor. We wanted to get it to overtime with the wet conditions on the field. We felt like we had to go in overtime instead of go for two. So we had our shots. You know, we lost the game.
So it was very minor is what he was saying in terms of how much thought did he give to actually going for two or just kicking the field.
And here's the thing. In almost every other scenario, I'm fine with it. I think the fact that you're across the field from Patrick Mahomes makes it very, very hard to pass up that opportunity.
Yeah. Right?
And I think that's, to me, that's the bottom line. That's a bit. You could say almost any other quarterback in the league, I'd have said, all right, I'm fine with you just kicking the field goal. He also at one point last night pointed to the weather, which I thought was interesting. It was like, I don't know.
That makes even less sense.
That's what he just mentioned in the bite. But that's what I was saying. Why would you not go for two given that you are going up against Patrick Mahomes and you don't want to give him a chance to get the ball back in his hands?
Yeah, I just there's a lot to go into it. But I think Patrick Mahomes, to me, that is the entire conversation. Patrick Mahomes in Arrowhead, that's the entire conversation. So you can kick it around a million different ways. I think I'm with y'all. I think I would have gone for two. Just because of who was across on the other sideline.
Yeah, I mean, Patrick Mahomes threw for almost 300 yards. They ran for 120 something. The wet conditions weren't hurting Kansas City. Not to mention they have one of the best kickers in the NFL in Harrison Butker. I understand saying I'm not going to do it. The weather explanation makes zero sense to me. 2 yards is a lot easier to get than, you know, maybe a 50-yard field goal in the weather conditions. So that just doesn't make sense to me. That the explanation doesn't make sense. The decision. You're an NFL coach. You've won quite a few games. You've made the playoffs two or three years in a row as the head coach. But I don't understand the weather conditions. This is a bad explanation. Maybe you should have came up with somebody should have helped him with a better explanation than that.
And I like what you said about what he's been able to do. I think a lot of people at the beginning of last year would have told you he was one of the guys that would have been on the hot seat quickly. And then, of course, they go out and win the division. They go to the playoffs and all the other stuff. So I think he's done a nice job. I think that team watched him last night. I was like, this team, you say teams take on the mentality of their head coach. I think that's a team that's taking on the mentality of their quarterback. The way Baker Mayfield plays, I think he brings a lot to the table. So,
Tiffany mentioned it, but his face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like,
no.
He knew. Yep. He knew what we all knew is that that offense is too good.
When we come back here, we'll get back to the Saints, who have fired their head coach, Dennis Allen. But what does that mean for Sunday's game against the Falcons? Is it a trap? We'll discuss when we come back here on The Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. This app.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. All right, the Saints have parted ways with head coach Dennis Allen, and now special teams coordinator Darren Rizzi will be named the interim head coach of the team. So that is the man that will be leading the Saints into their game with the Falcons this weekend. But lots of times when you see a head coach being fired midseason, it tends to galvanize a team sometimes. And that's happened quite a few on quite a few different occasions. So the question is now, does this become a trap game for the Falcons now they're getting a Saints team that is with an interim head coach?
Yeah, it's kind of the interim coach bounce. But it look,
the Woody Johnson bump that he talked about.
There's more to it than that. They're getting healthy. And that's the thing that people need to really think about, understand. They've got Taysom Hill back, Falcons killer.
That's not the question that's on the
sheet. But here's the deal. That's why it's a trap game, though, to me. But that is, I'm explaining to you why I think it's
yes,
a trap game.
I know.
Because you get Taysom Hill back. He's a Falcons killer, Tiff. You know that. You've been around this division and these two teams enough. You've got Derek Carr back. You never lost Kamara. He's not going anywhere, and he's absolutely been just crushing it. You know, I don't think Cam Jordan is the player that he has been in the past. I think age is starting to catch up with him.
But he still has a knack for
getting red and black on the ground.
Exactly.
It's a very good call, Tiff. I know that Cam has no sacks this year so far. It would not surprise me if his first sack or two came against the Falcons. It's just to your point, Tiffany, that's how it goes. So remember they got Ruiz back at center. He didn't play against us last time. So they're getting players back that are important to beating the Falcons. Yeah. And only the Falcons.
And I actually go back to – I had a Thanksgiving game, or I think it was – it had to be around Thanksgiving with Cam, obviously Saints and Falcons. I was in New Orleans.
I was there, I remember that.
And I had to interview him when he had the turkey leg. But I think he called it roasted Falcon is what he what he said as he took a bite out of that.
He kind of embodies the spirit of this rivalry because he's a guy that has something like 24 sacks in 25 games against the Falcons. He understands it. He's embraced it. And he puts a lot into this game. So whatever his stats are this year, throw him out the window.
Yeah, and he's definitely always been a force. And Lord knows, I can't tell you how many times up close and personal, have seen that for myself. And so Cam Jordan's just one of those. I will say this, his snaps have started to dwindle a little bit for whatever reason. I mean, it's gone down every single week since week five. His snap count has. So I'm curious kind of what the reason is behind that. I know that, he's older, a little bit dinged up. Here's what I'll say, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. I said this last week about the Saints. They're starting to get back healthy. The curiosity I have about it is they were healthy last week, and they were not able to put points on the board. Now, the yardage was there, and they were not able to put a ton of points on the board. But, again, man, I keep going back to, and this is going to catch up at some point, right? If the Falcons don't start hot the last couple of weeks offensively, then the other team can jump. If the other team can jump out to a lead and they can continue to run the ball, I think it gets the Falcons in a bad spot. Right, the way these games have developed, and Arch and I said on this show, and I asked Arch, I said, why did Tampa stop running the ball? And he said, I don't know. I bet they're asking themselves the same thing as they get into the film room. So you go back and look at Kamara's numbers this past week, and you look what he's able to do on the ground. And Lord knows, Taysom Hill, before he left the game against us the first time around, we couldn't stop him on the ground either. Short yardage situations, goal line, whatever. Now, the Falcons, I think, have made a few strides in terms of their run defense throughout the season. But I think when you look at it from that aspect, it's going to be really about getting a hot start for the Atlanta Falcons so that the Saints have to get into a mode where they have to throw the ball and kind of play catch-up. Because if they don't, I firmly believe that the Saints can run the ball on this Falcons front, and they can do it successfully.
They've shown that, and I just want to mention two things that you highlighted. So with Kamara, he has 1,000 scrimmage yards for the season. He's 12 rushing yards short of climbing atop a new franchise record there. And then also with throwing the ball, Chris Olave, he's out. We're assuming he might be out.
Yeah, excuse me. He's going to get through protocol.
He went out the last game, but he has to go through concussion protocol, and he's had a number of concerning concussions this season. So that was not his first this past week where he had to be carted off.
Yeah, it's scary, and I was a Chris Olave fan coming out of the draft. I thought he was the best receiver in that draft. I think he's still him. I think it's him and Drake right now competing hard for that. You know, you didn't have to deal with DeMario Davis the first time you played him. Willie Gay went out in the game. They're both back, and I've not seen an injury report out of New Orleans other than the obvious tiff. I don't know why they wouldn't be playing. So I think you're going to get a defense at more of full strength. This team right now reminds me of how you had to win games early in 16 when you had a porous defense at times, or a defense that gave up yards and points, and you had to score to keep up. It's a good point, Mike. You also need to run the ball, though. And I need to go back and look at the first time that we played them. I don't recall how well we ran the ball, but it is something that I need to go look at, because, look, it's important to run the ball and keep it out of their hands. We were struggling in games early as we couldn't get teams off the field.
Yeah, and I think when you look at New Orleans and what they are defensively, near the bottom in terms of yards per carry, and so hopefully that is something. I think it's 5.1. I think that's something the Falcons should be able to exploit. But the Falcons very much have I don't know what the right word is. It's a one-trick pony almost in terms, right? It's like the Vita Vea first time around. It was kind of like that. It was like we couldn't run the ball because Vita Vea was destroying us, and we didn't really have an answer for that. So we started throwing it, and Kirk ends up with 500 yards. So I think the fact that you can throw it and run it is a great thing. But if we're going to rely on – if we say we have to come out and run the ball and they're able to stop that, I think that is concerning. So we'll see what the answers where the answers lie with Zach Robinson.
And your question was how many rush yards did the Falcons have in that meeting against the Saints? 88. So between Tyler Allgeier and Bijan, just 88 rushing yards on the ground. Something else to bring up, to go back to the question, is the trap game stuff, right? They've lost 7 in a row. And knowing what I know about New Orleans teams that I've covered before, they thrive on being disrespected. And so there's been a lot of disrespect thrown that franchise's way, given the fact that things have not gone their way right now. So I feel like that's going to add fuel to the fire, as well as it being a division game against the Falcons. And as you mentioned, them getting guys healthy back.
It's a trap! It's a trap!
No, we'll say without Olave, and I believe Shaheed is still out.
Yeah.
Those are their top two receiving threats for them. And that's it. That's important if they don't have either one of those guys. But
they leaned on Kamara and they ran the football last week.
Well, I'm going to tell you something.
He also had 6 catches, if I'm not mistaken.
If they're allowed to run the ball 33 times like they did against you in the first time that you played, and you only run the ball 15, as Tiff just pointed out, for 88 yards, that's not good in New Orleans. And don't think that the crowd won't. Now, I'm not sure if they're back to putting bags over their heads as fans. I wouldn't mind seeing a few bags over some heads in New Orleans this weekend. But I'm going to tell you something. They like to show up for this game. I have been there for quite a few of these.
But say what you want about, what Mike just brought up about how, okay, yes, they ran the football. I'm losing my train of thought here. But with Kamara, I want to point out the last week, 155 rushing yards, and then he also had 60 receiving. So he can, that is what he's always been able to do, is do both.
And let's not lose sight of the fact, I had people that were upset with me, guys, on the postgame show, because we won the game the first time around against the Saints, and I got on this postgame show, and I was, like, struggling for answers. You remember, you get the Troy Anderson touchdown, you get the special teams touchdown. Offensively, we were pretty bad the first time around against New Orleans, and couldn't stop Taysom Hill until he left. And then all of a sudden you get a couple of non-offensive touchdowns. And like I said, I got on the postgame show and we had just beat the Saints in a rivalry game. And I'm sitting there going, I don't know what I just watched go forth. Like, and I had people that were upset me. Like, let's celebrate a victory. And I agree with that. But you've got to play better this time around. And this is it. Like you said, Saints team that's healthy. I don't know what the, to your point, I don't know what the crowd will be down there, but it's always usually a raucous environment when the Falcons come to town.
I will say this, though. We are a different team than we were when we played New Orleans the first time around.
I agree.
We are completely different. And so, and if I'm not mistaken, we were 1-2 going into that game, and they were 2-1. So both teams have their seasons have taken – we're taking different trajectories. We are better defense in some ways than we were when we played them the first time. And I can tell you we're a hell of a lot better of an offense than we were the first time. You know, I was going through some of the numbers. I mean, what Zach Robinson and Kirk have been able to get in a rhythm and on the same page, Tiff, and the points you see that they've scored, you know, it's different. Like, they are, I think, since week two, so starting with the Philadelphia game, this team's averaging something like 26 points a game. And that's exactly what they scored against New Orleans the first time. But, you know, 5-1 in the last six, they're 0-7 in the last seven. So, you know, both teams have taken or if you want to go back to that game, they're 0-6 in their last six. And that's starting with that game. So the trajectories of these two teams have went completely different ends of the spectrum.
Good point. Good point.
Let's shift gears when we come back. We are on the cusp of a 12-team playoff in college football. That's right. The college football playoff rankings are going to be released this evening. How do you think they'll stack up? Let's discuss next when we come back here on The Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back here on The Morning Shift, and
she got going.
I know
on
we
here.
Got.
Yeah,
it's like a rock Irish jig, some sorts.
I don't know. It feels like what were those videos they used to sell in the '90s of the River Dance?
Yes,
yeah, the old River Dance kind of feels like a River Dance.
I would like to see you guys actually. I would like to River Dance on a log,
golly,
on a lake.
Yeah, Dylan, some of y'all young kids never know the beauty of these weird infomercials. You know what I mean? With the 1-800 numbers at the bottom.
This is true.
Ordering videos online.
Music now.
I'm not even online. Ordering videos over the phone.
Yes. And all the greatest love hits. I actually saw a reel on Instagram yesterday about exposing the young children to the stuff that we had to look at in the 90s. Before we get to college football, I wanted to something I just saw. There's a Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift like movie coming out. I believe it's Lifetime, and it's not like based on.
I knew there was like a Hallmark, but I didn't know it was about them.
It's like you can look at it. It's a mega pop star, and she ends up falling in love with a football player.
Oh wow!
So
maybe that's not the one I saw.
This is why I thought it was a joke until I kept watching. I was like, no, this is actually real.
I knew there was a Chiefs movie. Is it the same one?
No, this is
a completely different one.
This is a completely different thing where they show like the beginning stage of this football player going to her concert, trying to get her attention.
The bracelet.
She kind of like blows it off, like
bracelet
whatever.
With the phone number.
And then it evolves into a beautiful love story that maybe if I feel like drinking one night that I will. It's probably like one of those fun things that you would watch.
You have to watch that movie drunk.
Like it's one of those. It would be funny to watch while you were.
Yeah. No, it's, I don't think I'll be. I don't think I'll see that one. Unfortunately, I might miss that one on purpose.
We truly ran out of. Is there going to be one next about a football star who is retires and then decides that he's going to unretire and then his wife leaves him for a jiu-jitsu instructor?
Look, it's a holiday inspired movie and it is on Lifetime. So I just want to. Let you guys know. I'm going to send it to y'all.
This what?
The man was in his feelings on Instagram, wasn't he?
I mean, I'm serious. That would be a Lifetime movie, maybe. I don't know.
I hope they make that one
not
a comedy.
Not a Hallmark, but a Lifetime movie.
I hope they make that one a comedy. Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Okay, let's get a check at college football.
I'm sorry. I can't help it.
The college football playoff rankings will be released this evening. We have a 12-team playoff that you can look forward to this season. But I'm wondering how much the AP poll, like how much will we see the teams that are, you know, in the top 10? Are they going to be in the ranking right off the bat? What happens to a team like Boise State? There's just a lot. There's a lot of questions going into tonight.
I'm
going
to go out on a limb and say that probably will be the worst viewership that show has ever gotten.
I would agree. I would agree because there's some other big results that will be coming out.
I was
going
to say, I think there will be some other news stations being tuned into at that point. But also, Tiff, also because the fact that 12 teams get in, it's like, dude, who even knows at this point?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, it was so critical, I think, you know, those first poll results to kind of get an inside look at how the College Football Playoff Committee was looking at the teams and how they were valuing wins. And now you're just like, dude, who like you look at the SEC and the standings and there is so much stuff left to be played out. There is like, you like Georgia sitting at the top and then you look past that and A&M and Texas still have to play, you know, obviously Florida and like, there's so many things, Tennessee and Georgia, who freaking knows at this point? I don't know.
I don't know if I 100% agree with that. About the ratings. I think people will tune in because they're very curious at how it's the first one's going to. This is the first one ever, and it's still going to be early in the night. So if you want to get results about other things, you can go after. But I think.
Well, you got a time. What time is that coming out?
The playoff like normally comes to like 7:30, I think, or 8.
Okay.
It's somewhere in that time
range.
Frame.
Prime time range.
10:04.
I just think the curiosity of how are they going to structure this? How are they going to, you know, rank teams? Like Indiana is an undefeated Big Ten team who is finally starting to get respect and creep in the top 10. Are they going to be inside that initial one? Does Penn State drop out because they lost to Ohio State? I mean, you know, does A&M in it, even though they lost and got just drubbed last week, but they're also, you know, tied for the lead in the SEC. Like, how do you look at these teams? And I think there's a lot of curiosity because you've got so many in there. And do you just ignore teams like Boise State until you can't ignore them, right? Do you keep them out until it's at the next to last poll and you say, well, this team's probably going to be in or this team's going to has a chance. We're going to pop. Where's Army come in at? I just think there's a lot of unknown. Therefore, curiosity might grab some viewers.
Yeah. I think that there obviously there's a lot of drama around the college football playoff and everything. I kind of want to get a sense of where some of these SEC teams do lie. And that's Bama aside. I don't know if Bama's a playoff team. I guess we're going to find out probably this weekend, more than likely. But I think it'll be interesting to me in the end when you get to the final one and you say, where does the team that loses the SEC title game, where do they end up? And do they get a home game or do they fall behind another SEC team and get docked for losing the SEC championship? That's going to be another tough pill to swallow for some people.
Well, I think that there's a lot of relative answers, Tiff. I think if you won a head-to-head with that team, then I don't think the SEC championship loss will affect you if you make the playoffs still, which I think like a one-loss Texas or a one-loss Georgia or, you know, one of those, I think, or a one-loss Tennessee, I think if one of those teams make the SEC championship game and lose, I think they're in the playoff no matter what.
Sure.
And I also think that that team would get a home playoff game over maybe – Let's say Texas doesn't make it. Georgia makes it but loses. Then I think Georgia gets a home playoff game and has a higher ranking than a one-loss Texas based on the fact that they played an extra game and they won a head-to-head.
Well, I agree with that. But my next question would be, let's look at like the possibility that maybe an LSU or a Texas A&M were to lose the SEC championship game, right? And now they've got a number of losses. Now, like an LSU would have like three losses, and one of those would be to USC, or Texas A&M's would be to Notre Dame, right? And now you have to start factoring that in as well. And you know, does one of those teams fall behind one of the like a Tennessee team that might be in that top eight mix, and Tennessee get a home game? So there's a lot of things left to be played out. I think this is just tonight going to be the first kind of insight into what this how these wins are all being valued and how these losses are being valued, honestly, because I think that's one of the bigger things as well.
And then you have to think about the at-large bid, right? So I'm looking at this on CBS Sports, and they are talking with Sportsline, so the betting, right? So they consider to have an 89% chance or better to make the college football playoff. That would be these teams, probably Oregon, Ohio State, Texas, Georgia, Miami, and Penn State. And then two more spots will go to a Big 12 and a Group of Five champions. So that leaves four at-large spots essentially completely up in the air.
Let's talk about Miami real quick, because that's an interesting team to me.
Coming to town.
How's Miami going to be judged in week one? Because undefeated, I think the win over Florida looks a little more impressive now, the way they beat them, and where we saw Florida hang in there with Georgia. They're both rivalry games. One, I think, is a tougher environment because you went into the swamp, although I think Florida's a better team now than they were in that game. But how are they viewed in the very first poll? And I think that could tell you a lot to how Miami might be viewed if they lose a game and then have to play in the SEC championship game with one loss. Yeah. And maybe a one-loss Clemson. Now, let me tell you something. Doesn't South Carolina still play Clemson?
Last time I checked.
That's not a walkthrough game anymore for Clemson. You know, I know that they hit a stride and for a while, and they were beating them pretty handily, and now they've fallen a little bit back to earth, but they're having a good run this year.
Yeah.
South Carolina doesn't look like a pushover right now.
No, they don't. And I think when you look at Miami's remaining schedule, of course, you know, they got three teams whose GPAs are higher than their yards per carry throughout the rest of the season. So that'll be interesting to see the way that Miami is viewed.
Interesting stat.
Yeah, you like that? That'll be an interesting way to see how that is. And, of course, they come to play Georgia Tech this weekend. A lot of things still up in the air about Georgia Tech. And Georgia Tech's always going to have that puncher's chance, to me, in my opinion, with Brent Key as the head coach. But I'm wondering if Miami doesn't get into a mode in these last three games where they are trying to win a Heisman Trophy as well. So that's going to be another thing to kind of keep our eyes on.
I want you guys to go ahead and thank me for not doing the Falcons Rise Up voice. We want to go ahead.
Well, I want to hear your version of it. We've got our version of it.
I'm not going to do it.
Now we want to hear you do it, Tiffany.
No, Dylan, you stay out of this.
Wow, she shut you right down, bro.
I'm still going to campaign for it.
Look,
campaigning is over for a while, hopefully.
What we are going to do when we come back here is talk about which Falcons players have been rising up lately and who will be needed to step it up big against what could be a trap game now that the Saints have fired head coach Dennis Allen. We'll be right back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It's a trap!
We are in our 7 o'clock hour, and it is brought to you by Zero Res. Smart, lasting, clean. Falcons see the Saints this weekend, and they will also be seeing an interim head coach for New Orleans in Darren Rizzi, because the Saints announced yesterday they have let go of head coach Dennis Allen.
I am a little bit shocked, to Bo's point earlier, Tiff, that Clint Kubiak didn't get a look at this. And I don't know that he's ready for that interim tag, but I think he's somebody that would be on your interview list, right? And so why not see what you've got going on? Maybe they thought it would be too much to put on his plate, and maybe you give it to the special teams coordinator so that there's a little bit more leeway. Maybe as him as a play caller, you don't want to throw that on him this early in his career as an OC or whatever it may be. But he's one of those fast risers, and I still think he's a good play caller and a good play designer, man. I think they've done some good things offensively when they've all been healthy this year, and I think there's a lot to be said for him in that role.
Well, think about it. I was just watching this Bucks-Chiefs replay, and I started thinking back to Dave Canales. Did anybody have Dave Canales on their bingo card as a future head coach this time last year? I mean, maybe starting to think about him, but no. And now I'm sitting here watching Liam Cohen, and Baker Mayfield went from a guy who people tried to say was getting OCs and coaches fired to maybe he's getting head coaches hired.
Yeah.
Because if this Bucs offense that you saw, who at one point in time they're up 14-10 and they've thrown two passes, they've got two catches from their wide receivers for 22 yards, yet they're on the road up against the two-time defending back-to-back three-time world champion with Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, and they're also undefeated, and they ended up losing the game. So, you know, Cohen might be there, that guy. We might have to see Kubiak. Maybe Cohen gets a job this year, and we have to see Kubiak in Tampa.
In Tampa? That would be a nightmare.
Well, it would be awful.
I'll be honest, and I know you love when I'm honest with you. First of all, Liam Cohen, every time he came on the TV last night, I thought I was looking at Arthur Smith. I don't know if y'all get that vibe. He's dressed like him. He looks like him. I'm like, dude, Arthur Smith. Oh, no, that's not Arthur Smith. But to your point, Dave Canales gets the head coaching job in Carolina. I don't know that Dave Canales was their first option, right? I think that was the situation with the owner and everything else going on over there. I think they probably had to make a few phone calls before they found a head coach. But Dave Canales was the OC in one of the worst rushing offenses in NFL history the last couple of years. When you look at the way they were able to run the ball the last couple of years, awful, awful. And so there's a lot to be said about what Liam Cohen is doing. And also Clint Kubiak as well. So I do think that when you look around at the offenses in this league, they are head and shoulders above, offensive coordinator-wise, above where they were just a couple of years ago. And I think there's a lot to be said about both those offenses. And I think you'd probably love to have a guy like Clint Kubiak, say, in a Carolina to throw a little bit of a run game into what they have over there, because obviously whoever's at quarterback is probably going to need it next year.
Well, we won't see Kubiak as the interim head coach this weekend again. It's going to be Darren Rizzi. So now, as for who's going to be on the field, there are some question marks for the Falcons. And you can look at Grady Jarrett. We all know what he means to this team. And he dealt with an Achilles sprain, I believe it was.
Strain.
Thank you. And so Coach Raheem Morris said that Grady is day-to-day. He said they looked at it, and he thought it was good news, so it might be a good sign with the imaging and everything that he underwent. And yes, he did undergo that MRI. And Jarrett told reporters in the locker room that he felt positive about it. So
I saw him leave the locker room Sunday, and I thought it's fine. I could see him not playing on Sunday.
Sure,
I could also see him play. I actually heard Carl and Mike talking about this yesterday on Dukes and Bell, and I agreed with kind of the sentiment. And I think it was Carl that was saying, you're 6-3. Yes, you need to win games, but you also need to try to win games and look at
in December
where you'll be in December, matter, January.
I agree.
And so if you can go a week without Big Grady, maybe you try to push it, right?
Because might be the week to do it.
You've been, because look, you haven't rushed Troy Anderson back because you haven't needed to because of how Nate Lamon is, and so do you need to rush Grady back? You haven't had to rush Drew Dahman back because of how Ryan Neusel has played.
Been solid,
and
man.
Ian Rappaport did tweet out that it is not supposed to be anything that's long term, or excuse me, that's in regards to Drake London.
So, yeah, and
with a hip pointer, right?
Yeah.
Here's the thing about Grady Jarrett. I don't know that I've ever heard of that injury, and Lord knows I know all about some lower body injuries. I don't know that I've ever heard of an Achilles. What do you say, strain or sprain? Which one?
Strain.
I don't know the difference in either one.
I know.
But
I kind of
yeah. It's like it kind of seems like the same thing. I heard of calf strain, right? You've heard of all kinds of stuff.
Well,
I don't know
I
what
guess
the
a sprain,
actual.
You probably wouldn't walk.
I don't know what the actual mechanics of that are.
I don't know if you can sprain an Achilles. I'm not sure how that goes.
But
I was always under the understanding that a strain, like a calf strain, was kind of a slight tear.
I thought it was the other way around.
So I don't know what exactly an Achilles strain is, but maybe he just tweaked it, and it's definitely not torn in any way.
Yeah, and I think the other thing to keep an eye on, and I noticed this later in the game, and I don't know if it was after he was fully out, but you did slide Damon Harris into like a three technique role and put D'Angelo Malone outside rushing the passer later in the game, even though that's not the reason D'Angelo Malone was getting his reps, because he got some earlier in the day. But I think that's something to keep an eye on as well, because I thought Damon Harris actually played decently in the interior getting some pass rush. And maybe if you're scared about Grady Jarrett and what he means this weekend, that might be one of the answers you do see.
Yeah, and you saw Kentavious Street step up, Tiff, for Ruka Ro-Ro-Ro.
Yep.
I wonder if Big Grady can't go if we see Brandon Dorlus get his first time being active.
And Damon Harris, he's out of call-ups, I think, too. So that'll be interesting to see the way that plays out now that I think about it.
Back to Drake London, since I jumped the gun, Ian Rappaport did put out that it's not suspected to be a long-term issue. So he has that hip pointer, and Coach Raheem Morris saying that he's also day-to-day. It's going to be a pain tolerance kind of thing for him, which now leads me into this segment that I will never say these words in the particular voice that you guys like, but I'll let Dylan handle it.
I think this fits your jazz singer type.
Where's the voice?
Oh, no, he doesn't. We're going to do us
we're
like
doing,
that.
Oh, we're doing the...
He doesn't want to make our goofy voices.
No? He doesn't, yeah. You don't want the...
No, he just wants the good vibes.
This is the good vibes? Okay. Now I feel like... I'm going to have to give a sermon. You know who could have produced the music for this? It could have been Ray McLeod.
Ooh.
Since he and a lot of other NFL athletes did collaborate on songs for the Madden game. And he is my player that I believe is rising up for the Falcons. And you have to wonder, how could his role expand with Drake London's status? We don't know if he'll be playing or not on Sunday, if they decide to maybe use it as a game for him to rest as well, like you mentioned with Grady Jarrett. But you look at McLeod's stats throughout the season, they were better at the beginning of the season and kind of dipped off a little bit. But I think now he's got his first touchdown of the season, which he got this past weekend. I think the status of Drake London could impact and maybe see him play a larger role in terms of what he can do for this team. We have seen him step up before, and hopefully he'll get back to that. I think due for maybe a late in the season kind of surge.
I love that.
Yeah, I think it's a good one, Tiff. He's having career year in almost every category, so I think it's a good one.
Yeah, my riser upper, if you want to call it that. So I went all the way back to week one. I was kind of watching some film. I've noticed, and I've said this on the pre and post, Caleb McGarry has been a guy who I think just structurally in terms of the way that he's used his body the last couple of weeks, because he's been injured, for whatever reason, it's led to him having a little bit better kick sets, tighter elbows on his punches, tighter hands. You know, he used to be a guy a couple of years ago that played with his hands out wide, grabbing shoulder pads up high, you know, exposed his chest. His hands have been as good as I've ever seen on Caleb McGarry film the last 4 weeks, coming off the injury, the last 3 weeks, whatever it is. And it just leads me to kind of go back to where we were in week one and look at the Caleb McGarry against T.J. Watt matchup, that everybody was ready to bench Caleb McGarry. Everybody was ready to put Storm Norton in. What is Zach Robinson doing? He's trying to get him some help with Kyle Pitts. Caleb McGarry, and you know I'm going to go with an offensive lineman, Caleb McGarry has been one of the guys that has risen up over the last couple of weeks. He's allowed this team to do some special things offensively, not just in the run game like he's known for, but in the passing game as well. Love what Caleb McGarry's doing right now.
It's funny because in the offseason, all people cried about was, you got Kirk Cousins, you got to upgrade right tackle.
Right.
And yesterday, all I saw was multiple analysts talking about the offensive line play and how good it's been.
Yeah.
Look, I've been very critical of the linebackers this year. And I've talked, how many times, Mike, have I said shed and stack, stop running around blocks? I think Caden Ellis is my riser-upper, because in the last three games, this dude has 34 tackles, a couple of tackles for loss, five quarterback hits, and a sack. Okay, he's getting the job done. In fact, you saw one of those tackles for loss last week was where he knifes through the backfield, makes a play on CeeDee Lamb for fourth and one. The other tackle for loss he had last week was where he read a screen on their opening drive in the second play, beat Zach Martin, Mike's idol. I mean, his hero, the creme de la creme for him.
He's all famer.
And beats him, knives through, and kind of blows that drive up. They only get three out of it. It helped change. He had two plays that changed the game last week. So my guy is Caden Ellis.
I love it all the way around, man. Caden has been one of the guys that's been a leader of that defense. And Tip, to your point about Ray, I actually really like the fact that you went with Ray McLeod, because he just seems
like
a guy
name.
That he seems like a guy that in crunch time, him and Darnell Mooney in crunch time, time after time, have made incredible catches across the middle and been able to step up, man. So that's y'all are both good all the way around in my book.
Results will be pouring in this evening. I'm not just talking about the election. The college football playoff ranking comes out, and it's also the trade deadline in the NFL. Today is November 5th. There are some bold predictions. One writer has the Falcons possibly landing a pass rusher. Let's discuss next when we come back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Falcons rise up.
Yeah, yeah.
There you Falcons, go. Falcons rise up. Yeah.
We are going in the huddle here on the Morning Shift to give you the latest NFL headlines. And this coming from Cody Benjamin for CBS Sports. He's making some bold trade predictions ahead of the NFL trade deadline, which is at 5 p.m. this evening. And on that list, at number four on the list, he has the Falcons adding a second proven edge rusher. So he goes on to say that they will be getting this edge rusher from the Browns, Za'Darius Smith, in a trade.
Yeah, I would have to see what they're willing to give up. Remember, we already are missing a couple of picks next year because the Judon move and other things. And I would love to say that Za'Darius Smith is a guy. I wonder if Ojulari out of New York is a better option just because he's kind of come on recently. I can't imagine they're asking a ton from him. And they already have two options as their pass rushers inside of that defense. So I don't know. To me, it's all about what the asking price is, what the Falcons are willing to give up. I think you'd love to say, well, you know, hey, we got to go get a guy. We're one piece away. I don't know that that's true. And maybe I'm just, Bo, you can speak on this. I think maybe I'm just a little jaded from the whole Judon thing because I expected a lot more out of him when that trade was made, and we haven't gotten it so far.
And trade deadline's at 4 p.m. today.
Well, I think Matthew Judon's a little bit different animal. I also wonder what Za'Darius Smith is at times. I mean, I know that he has five sacks already this year, but he also plays opposite Myles Garrett. And what does that help? You know, he is a guy that's more than three times in his career he's had double-digit sacks. He only had 5.5 last year. He has 5 this year. His base salary, though, now he is under contract for next year. You can opt out. I really don't know, and I need to check, of how it's going to look for the team that trades for him, of what would happen with his cap situation, because he's only going to carry a base salary of $1.5 million, but he's got a roster bonus next season of like two, and then another one around $500. So he could essentially cost you around $4 million, and I think the Browns are the ones eating the rest of that dead cap. So if he's only going to cost me $4 million next year, and I know I can keep him, I'm a little more open to making that trade. What Cleveland wants for him, that's a different situation, because I have taken personally D'Angelo Malone off the trading block.
Yeah, got you.
But I still have that seventh out there. So, and I think I have two of them. So maybe I'll give you both of them if you want. But I'm not. We don't have our third, and we don't have our fifth. And I want to say we don't have a sixth, but I have to double-check that. So yeah, the draft is looking pretty thin next year, and you're not going to have a ton of cap money in the cap to wiggle around and make other moves. I think that's why a lot of people are pointing to the Za'Darius Smith stuff and what he might cost next year. You can keep him on the roster.
Well, and I asked you this off-air a couple of times, and I want to just, you know, get you guys' thoughts on this. And let's just take Za'Darius Smith's name out of it. Let's just say any edge rusher. Is there any package that could be sent to Atlanta that you would consider trading a Michael Penix for? Because that team would love to have maybe a really cheap signal caller up there in Cleveland, if you get my vibe on that one. I just wonder, because I know a lot of people have kicked that around. For the record, I do not think the Atlanta Falcons are even close to thinking about that, but I think that's an interesting talking point for some.
Yeah, I know everyone's in love with Myles Garrett. I am very unsure about this whole Myles Garrett situation and giving up a future quarterback, franchise quarterback, or even a first. I don't know what this. I know he had two sacks last week, but I don't know what his feet are. I don't know how long a guy wants to play. The guy has foot issues that he said he's dealt with, and it scares me long term for Miles Garrett.
Because I don't. Like, the dude's a freak of an at. Like,
okay.
His money scares me more than it.
Do you think
I've seen him do sprints? Like, I know in a warm up ahead of a game, and I'm running up to go talk to him. Like that, like he's still explosive.
I don't disagree. Are you a Miles Garrett away from a Super Bowl? Because I don't know. I can't say yes right now.
You're concerned about the foot for long term. What about when? What about when now?
Because yeah, I don't know it.
That's what you would be saying.
Because
if you
I don't know if
move.
He gives you that Super Bowl. I don't know if Miles Garrett. If you told me right now, you trade Michael Penix for Miles Garrett, I 100% guarantee. I guarantee you, you're in the Super Bowl. Just tell me you're in it, then I'm doing it. Because I think Miles Garrett could make a difference in a game like that. And I think
people
your offense is good
plan
enough
for Miles Garrett. Like,
I understand that.
Wrecker.
I understand that, but. I also have to worry about the long-term future of this franchise and financially and draft pick-wise. That's, you know, and that's what worries me. But if you told me he put you in the Super Bowl, then yeah. Tell me he puts me in the NFC Championship game. I might be open to it. But there are concerns, and they're rightful concerns. Also, I don't know if they're going to do that. I mean... He's a franchise player there. He's really the only franchise player there.
Yeah. I will be curious to see how it all pans out. I think that there are a number of other players we haven't even talked about that'll probably pop up as edges that might be dealt. I mean, a guy like Josh Allen down in Jacksonville or, you know, somebody like that. But I think it's going to be a lot of craziness today, in my opinion, over some of these teams that are ready to pull the plug on this year.
So there's some fallout from the Cowboys' loss to the Falcons on Sunday, and that would be injuries, meaning Dak Prescott, their quarterback, he's set to miss multiple weeks with a hamstring injury, and there's talk, could IR be an option? Again, he also is dealing with a hand injury, but there's no further details on that. Everything seems to be about the hamstring, which he did say he felt something pull in that game against the Falcons. But
yeah, I just wonder, I said this to Bo when I saw that news come up, I just wonder at what level of this franchise these decisions are being made, because it just seems to me that when you talk about Dak and you talk about the injury, and I'm sure it's bad, but it feels like to me that we already talked about them not running Dak this year at all, like at all, and then you kind of look at it and you say, man, at what point do you just punt on what you are this year? And it just kind of feels like that, but I also think Cooper Rush is a viable option at quarterback for them. We saw it in the second half. He made some nice throws. So I'll be curious to see how that Dallas team points to over the next couple of weeks. But obviously it stinks for Cowboys fans that Dak won't be out there.
I mean, Trey Lance. Do you see if Trey Lance is worth bringing back? Because this is his last year there. Do you see if he's worth bringing back for as a backup or – This would be a shot for him to prove himself. I don't know.
If this would have happened a week ago, I'd have said start him so maybe you can build some trade value for him.
A week ago, yeah. Now you're out of luck. Unless maybe Cleveland wants to make another bad trade.
There you go.
This hour brought to you by Zero Res. Smart, lasting, clean. Well, your Gators have some bad news, Bo, as they go into their game against Texas. We will share that with you. You don't really use share when you're talking about bad news.
It's not bad news. It's not terrible news.
It could be lukewarm news because it might not be terrible.
Might not. It would help if I could read. That's probably what the problem
it
is.
It looks bad. Yeah. It looks like it's still bad, though.
So. Reading comprehension is a skill, Tiff.
I need a second cup of coffee. And we've got it mic'd up.
Yeah, we got it mic'd up coming up. How bad do you have to be fired as a head coach in the NFL? Well, one of these Dennis Allen numbers left my jaw on the floor. I'll share it with you when we come back on the other side of the breaks. Mic'd up on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We are back here on the morning shift. I'm laughing at my own jokes and myself. This hour brought to you by Zero Res Smart Lasting Clean. All right, DJ Lagway. This is actually semi-lukewarm kind of good news is if that's what you want to call it for the Gators. He's not been ruled out for the Texas game. So Florida and Texas locking up this weekend.
I wondered what the long-term status will be because we just got done talking about Dak, right? And the fact that he's out for a few weeks. DJ Lagway, what looked like a way worse injury, a hamstring injury. He's getting carted off the field after his hamstring injury against Georgia and was playing pretty well at the time. And I think that the any sign that he's even possible to go this week against a Texas team sounds and feels like a minor miracle, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he was later on the sideline during the game this weekend with a brace on the left leg and on crutches as well, but he did undergo an MRI. And so Coach Billy Napier said the good news is we've had positive information on that front. We do think that the injury is less significant and there's a path to recovery and return.
Yeah,
I just don't think it's this week. I mean, I know he hasn't been ruled out. I would just be absolutely shocked. And I'd be worried for him, honestly. I would be worried for his long-term future if he came back. I think it's Jack Warner is the third-string back. I think that's his name. I give him credit. He did everything he could. He
not great numbers, but gritty.
Well, I mean, hell, you're a third-string quarterback. You didn't expect, I mean, you really probably, I mean, I know you're second at this point, but you didn't necessarily expect to play. You're a transfer from, I think it was Harvard or Yale, one. It's a tough situation
one of those really
to
smart
be.
Schools.
Well, it's a tough situation to be thrown in at. And so I felt for him, but I'm not sure you rush him back. You still have LSU. If you rush Lagway back and something else goes wrong, when you maybe could have let him sit another week because you have LSU and Ole Miss, and then Florida State. I don't know if it's that particular order.
Mm.
I think it's, LSU, Ole Miss, and Florida State in that order. So I don't ever want to sacrifice a game, but maybe you just throw poor old Jack out there and see what he's got.
Yeah, Warner ends the game 7-22 for 66 yards. I thought he played gritty, although the interception does set up Georgia's, you know, kind of ability to score that final touchdown. But I think to your point, if this was just, you know, if this was Graham Mertz with a pulled hamstring, you'd say, all right, you go in there and you're just going to chuck it down the field anyways. I think when you look at DJ Lagway, so much of what he's able to do is because of his mobility, his top-end speed, right, and the things he has to get done with his legs. And going up against a Texas team, especially when you cannot fully practice all week, to your point, Bo, I think that kind of sets you up to a point where maybe you're putting your team in a bad situation.
Also, it's Aiden Warner, not Jack. I don't know where the hell I got Jack from, but looked like a Jack to me, I guess. But Aiden Warner, I want to give you some respect. He's actually from Winter Park. It's just, I don't know, man. That's just such a tough situation to be thrown into.
Where are you at on Napier right now?
Well, I have seen nothing but progress from this team.
That's a good point. Play hard.
They brought in the new DC to start the year, and that looked like a terrible move because the defense was horrific. But this team hasn't quit on Billy or their teammates, and that's not easy to do. I mean, that's an easy thing to do when you start the season like they did. I would like to see Lagway and Jaden Vaughn, Eugene Wilson another year. I would hope that you could keep some of these guys around. See, that's the problem is you never know. I would normally say in a regular year, well, let's keep him because our regular year, what used to be college football, because you don't want to get rid of these guys because you lose guys to the portal and stuff. Now with the portal and the NIL, you might lose them anyways.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know, but it looks like he has made progress and the team is building. So I would hate to just pay, $25, $26 million buyout when you could keep him one more year, see where you're at, and I don't think the team's a debacle like it looked like it after the first, three games.
Yeah, well, at a certain point, it's worth firing a head coach. Let's hit it. Obviously, Dennis Allen coached plenty of games in the NFL. He had his opportunities to prove his worth as the New Orleans Saints head coach, and he's been around the NFL for a while, so he has coached plenty of games, and he's longer in the tooth than some other head coaches. So, short-term head coaches, I'm going to see where you guys' head is at. Who pops into your head as some of the worst short-term head coaches? Like, just spent one season in the NFL, and you're like, that guy needs to go somewhere, man. It's not good right now. You guys got any names off the top of your head? Because I got a couple successful college coaches that pop into mind.
I mean, Hackett. Nathaniel Hackett. Okay. is the top. I mean,
that was 1 year in Denver?
Yeah, it wasn't even 1 year. Didn't even make it one year.
Yeah.
Josh McDaniels' term in Denver and in Oakland, I know he's technically been a coach for
Oakland was two.
Well, I think it was one and a half at both. I think it was one and a half, Tiff, at both.
Yeah,
he was pretty, 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 pretty bad.
I was curious. I didn't know. All right, so obviously Lane Kiffin is up there. Like, you look at Lane Kiffin's stint with the Raiders, which seems kind of mind-blowing that he was given, that guy like Lane Kiffin was given that job at age, what, 33?
Remember when he was fired and it was the whole, you know, Jamarcus is our quarterback. He's a great quarterback. Get over it.
Yeah.
So it was that long ago. You say Jamarcus Russell.
That was 2008 or 2009 when he got fired.
Yeah.
Kiffin.
I also think of a guy like Frank Reich, who obviously, you know, had his ups and downs in Indy, but last year, you know, pretty bad over in Carolina. How about another college coach, Urban Meyer, who didn't stand the test of time? Bobby Petrino, another good college coach, didn't stand the test of time. You can go all the way through.
He left on his own accord, though.
And well, wasn't going well.
Yeah.
By the way, the NFC South, it seems like, has had more than their share of awful head coaches. It's like on any top 30 list I've looked at in terms of bad head coaches, like every team in the NFC South has at least two. Like, you're going all the way back to some of the bad moves that have been made. I looked at Romeo Crennel, who Andy Reid won with that team just a year later after he was asked to leave. How about a guy who lives here now, Hugh Jackson? You look at his record over a couple of seasons up in Cleveland, not very good. All right. Now, the longer in the tooth, because this was tweeted out yesterday by the NFL on CBS Twitter account, and I found it to be somewhat shocking. All right. So head coaches over the last 30 years that have coached a minimum of 75 games as a head coach. Last 30 years, minimum 75 games as a head coach. The fifth worst, Doug Marrone. This guy was the offensive line coach at Alabama 2 or 3 years ago. Right, I got a chance to meet with him. I remember his stint in Jacksonville. Not very good. I had to check back in with you guys. Fourth worst winning percentage. Now, again, the last 30 years, minimum 75 games, Dom Capers, 375 winning percentage. I don't know how familiar you guys are with Dom Capers.
Wasn't he the first head coach of Carolina? I think he was the guy that...
You might be right.
And then I know that he
came back.
Well...
They brought him back.
Did he go back there?
Yeah.
I know that he had another. He was the OC. He was a DC, in Green Bay for quite a while and was pretty good there. He might have been the DC when they won the Super Bowl with Rodgers.
Yeah. How about the third worst? All right. Again, last 30 years, minimum 75 games. Jim Schwartz, who was with the Lions for a number of years.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
I don't think a lot of people were a huge fan of Jim Schwartz, man. He just did things very different. Obviously, all these guys, great coordinators, right? All these guys were great coordinators at times in their career. But then you start bouncing around as head coach, and you're like, whew, that's rough. All right, second to worst was Romeo Crennel. Like we just mentioned, 337 winning percentage over his time as a head coach and multiple stops, obviously, for him. And then the worst winning percentage by a pretty wide margin, if you coached over 75 games in the last 30 years, was Dennis Allen at a 329 winning percentage. So I think some people, I'm sure there's even Saints fans, some people look at it and go, man, you know, that's a team that was really good before they were marred by injuries. Let's be honest, man. He was already a hair away from being fired at multiple points. The fact that this team, and I think we even heard it in Alvin Kamara's voice, when we listened to him yesterday and he was talking about, yeah, we got a lot of guys on this roster with confidence. Might be something else. It doesn't sound to me like Dennis Allen ever really had control of this locker room over the last couple of years. And there you have it, a 329 winning percentage, guys. And that's going to get you fired 10 times out of 10 when you talk about that big of a sample size. So we can go back and forth. Dennis Allen, what kind of coach is he? I know that he's a good coordinator, whatever else it is. But boy, oh boy. I think if you look at the numbers, it was time for him to go.
Did you mention Greg Williams?
I didn't all the way get to Greg Williams. No. Well, and of course he's not on that top five list because he didn't have 75 games. But
yeah, that's true. He only had 34. He had a 393.
Yeah, he was rough. Gus Bradley was on the short term list. Gus Bradley, Camp Cameron from the Dolphins, Spagnuolo, who's a great coordinator. He was not very good with the Rams. And a lot of these guys just come down to development of their draft picks, right? I mean, you can go all the way down, and some of these guys just made some rough decisions when it came to the draft. So, rough stuff, man. And obviously, there's a couple of Falcons coaches on this list as well. Lehman Bennett, how about that? Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Not as big a sample size, but yeah, rough stuff.
When we come back here on the morning shift, it will be time for the wake-up call. You can tell us if you think this game against the Saints is a trap game, and why? Give us a call at 404-726-0929. Wake up call is next on the morning shift on Sports Radio 929 The Game. We're in our 8 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. It is time for the wake-up call. You can call us at 404-726-0929. You can tell us if you think this Falcons game against the Saints this weekend is a trap game since they have fired their head coach, Dennis Allen.
You said Dennis Allen?
Yeah.
Oh.
That was their head coach.
Yeah, I know. I thought I misheard what you said. Oh. So, yeah, sorry.
All right. Yeah, I'm upset they fired him. I would like to see him coach at least one more game of mediocrity. is it mediocre if you're...
I would say one of the worst. Seven in a row is not mediocre.
I'm just talking about his overall winning percentage of what was his record in New Orleans alone? You had those numbers.
Yeah, I had the winning percentage. I had to look back up the actual record, but I can real quick if you'd like me to. But it's not good. Not good.
Well, I know. That's why I want him to stay there. Can they rehire him?
Oh, my goodness. All right, let's go to the lines then while Mike looks that up. We have Chase in Jefferson. Good morning, Chase.
Hey, good morning. How y'all doing?
What's up, buddy?
Hey, so in short, you know, good teams, you don't buy into the whole trap game. Oh, he's going to have the interim coach bump. So if the Falcons are good, which I certainly think they are, I don't think this is a trap game. I think this is a slap game. I hate New Orleans. I hope we beat them every game for the rest of their existence. Also, guys, I'm a grown man, and I'm okay with putting my hand up. I called in several weeks ago. Very hurt, very distraught, because I thought the Falcons were going to be bad again. There's a lot of slander, A.J. Terrell, Kyle Pitts, Kirk Cousins. I was very critical. I'm just happy to say I'm putting my hand up. I was wrong. The Atlanta Falcons are good. We need to make a splash at the trade deadline. Need to beef up that defense, but, man, this is a good team. We got the right coach. Just got to keep getting better every week.
Yeah.
Just on behalf of all women out there, it's nice that – you know, you have a man out there that's willing to look in the mirror, see his flaws.
I will not allow that.
You know.
All right.
It's always great.
I will not allow that. You can only imagine if I was talking down about women on here, Tiff, you'd come across this table.
Okay? There's nothing to talk down about.
Okay.
We're perfect.
Okay. No, but I think that's a good call, right? Because I think when you look at what this Falcons team is, they've obviously kind of grown into their own shoes. And I think that – look, we're going to go back and forth, I think, and talk about that Pittsburgh game at the end of the season and through the offseason because it has a lot to do, in my opinion, of do you play in the preseason? Do you hit the ground running? And obviously, they didn't hit the ground running. But this team has just gently morphed into kind of what we always thought they'd be, a precision passer and a solid run game. And I love the way all these elements have kind of molded together. I mean, Raheem Morris – obviously with Zach Robinson, with Kirk Cousins, with, you know, what was left here with Bijan, this offensive line. I think it's been a beautiful thing, man. And this team is going to have hiccups. I don't know whether to label it a trap game, but I don't think it's a slap game this weekend. I think that this is going to be a very tough test to go on the road and beat the Saints. And so, you know, call it what you want to, but
it's a trap.
Yeah, Dylan wants to call it a trap, I guess.
Do you know Dennis Allen's dad played for the Falcons?
I did not know
that. He was actually born in Atlanta, Georgia. Now he grew up in Hurst,
Texas. Do you dislike him less now?
Nah. I mean, I don't dislike him at all. I just don't.
26-53 as a head coach.
Yeah. My dislike for him is not – I don't dislike him. I mean, he's not – like, he's never done anything like Sean Payton has. That's a person I dislike.
If he wouldn't have come out in the post-game presser last year and said, "Yeah, I don't blame Arthur Smith for being mad," I'd be mad too. Then I would have he would have been at the top of my list.
I also
like, "No, man."
I know that Arthur probably got a little bit of a flack for coming out so aggressively, but I didn't blame him one bit for coming out aggressively
no, I didn't
that
either.
Game. I actually liked it because you know there's a lot to be said, you know, the whole, well, stop them. You know, if you don't like it, stop them. That wasn't that situation.
No, that wasn't that. And not only that, but in NFL, you never burn bridges. I think we all know that. You don't ever burn bridges.
Everyone
and
gets
so
recycled.
You, when Dennis Allen probably has a good idea that Arthur Smith's headed out the door at that point, and if he would have been the one that made that call, you want to talk about just spitting in somebody's face on the way out of their door, man. That's rough.
Back to the lines we go. We have Otis O'Dog. What's going on in College Park?
Mike Mafio
is in the building. Whip. Let's go.
As always, Mike. What's up, Mike? Yeah, as always.
Living the dream.
Hey, man, you know, we always got to tell the nation, you know, Mike Mafio, we ain't coming. We here, nation. Yeah. We here.
Yeah, that's a sad thing.
What's up, Squid? How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. I'm great.
He seems a little bit downtrodden over your phone call.
But before I apologize for Tiff. A couple months ago, I said she was some eye candy, and I think it'll fit. And I wanted to just come on and officially say, Tiff, I apologize for that. Mm. I know you're much more than just eye candy, so I apologize wholeheartedly for saying that to you.
Well, okay? I appreciate that. Even as a call, I appreciate that.
All right, well, moving on. I don't think this is a trap day because Kirk already said, we come to your trap, we're going to take your trap. We come to your trap, we're going to take your trap. We ain't worried about no trap days.
Yeah.
Look, you Saints fans, y'all going to get it this year. We got you. We going to get you this year. It's over for you. That's all I got to say. We come to your trap, New Orleans, and we're going to take your trap.
Yeah, okay? Great call. Craig, actually, one of the better calls we've had.
Mike Mafio.
Great call.
Great call.
Oh, is it over?
Yeah.
Just,
did you sleep through that one?
Yeah, a little bit. I ignore when they say in there Mike's Mafia. You know, but it's
walk
okay.
Walk into your trap, take over your trap.
I believe he just regurgitated what I said yesterday, though, when I said, you know, hey, you that we're going to walk in their trap and take it over. That's what I said yesterday.
So you're going to take Kirk credit said. For that?
Of walk into your trap, take over your trap.
No, I'm not taking over it. I'm just saying, if you're Mike's Mafia, you got to come with some original stuff, you know?
No, I think everybody in this town from the has nation. Probably said that today.
That's because most of this town is a part of the nation.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, yeah.
Except for a few stragglers.
Not true.
So back to the lines. Let's go to Chris. Good morning, Chris.
What up?
No wamps around here. Squid Nation kicking through the door.
That's nope. right,
What's
sir.
Going on?
Nope.
Good morning.
I was a
good morning, fearless leader.
I joined the nation.
Exactly, Otis. Good morning, fearless leader.
Sir.
All American.
Hey man, what's going on?
What's going on? Hey, Mademoiselle Let Food.
Oh, my goodness. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm gonna get right to it. And yes, this is a trap game, and here's the reason why. The Saints 0-7. Get rid of their coach. Olave's out. And this is where my wake-up call goes to you, Coach Ra, as a former interim coach for our Atlanta Falcons. You know what is going on in the building when the team is like this. They're coming out for blood. It's our rivalry. You cannot let the Falcons sleepwalk through film session. Practice has got to be up-tempo, and you have got to go put your foot on their neck and kick them while they are down. This is absolutely a trap game. And one of the things I loved about Saban and Belichick, their teams never played down to competition. Never, never, never. We need to win this game and keep chugging on to an NFC championship matchup with the Detroit Lions. Hashtag Squid Nation. Hashtag Squid Squad.
That was a good
you just remember, this was a house that Squid Billy built.
Not that.
That's right.
But the point about Raheem Morris knowing what it's like.
Well, I think
like,
that last was a soundbite.
No, yeah.
It was.
Yeah. Tiff, I think you're right. I think that was actually a good point. I hadn't even considered that, to be honest with you, about him being the interim last time around. You know, and I think there's – look, and I was part of those Saban teams that you played to a standard and all that. That's not quite the same as it is in the NFL. And I know that Belichick did that, and he did a great job of it. But there's, you know, no Belichicks running around the NFL right now. So I just think it's interesting to see – what version you get, because you did not do that. You played a team that had lost three in a row just a few weeks ago, and you didn't show up for that one. And so I think one of the things I do value about Raheem is his consistency and his demeanor. And so hopefully he can get these guys to play up to that standard this weekend on the road.
We got a little bit of breaking news. I know we were discussing moves to happen ahead of the NFL trade deadline, which is at 4 p.m. today. And we went through a bold prediction list, which had the Browns' Za'Darius Smith coming to the Atlanta Falcons in a trade. But in reality, according to Ian Rappaport, he is headed to the Lions. So they are obviously trying to make up for the big loss that they had with Aiden Hutchinson going down a few weeks ago. So now it looks like, according to Ian Rappaport, that Za'Darius Smith, the edge rusher, is going to the Detroit Lions from the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, very little draft capital involved in that one. It looks like a 2026 seventh going with Za'Darius Smith, and they're getting back a 2025 fifth and a 2026 sixth. So I want to take this moment to say he wasn't any good anyways. You know what I mean? We didn't need him anyways. I'm just kidding. He was, as far as your PFF grade, and I know that Raheem has mentioned that about Arnold Ebiketie, he's a tick above Arnold Ebiketie in that realm, but not like head and shoulders above, right? And so I think that probably weighs on your decision-making if you're Terry Fontenot in that role.
I hope not. I hope the Pro Football Focus grade doesn't weigh in.
I just mean the fact that you already have an Arnold Ebiketie. Why are you shipping? You know what I mean? Like, if you have a guy that's close, you're obviously going to play Judon in those situations. So if that's the case, then what are we doing, you know?
Yeah, I do agree with that. If I'm going to go trade for someone, they have to be a clear-cut upgrade over. And you can say, well, five sacks. Well, he's Arnold Ebiketie's not opposite of Myles Garrett either. So I don't disagree with you there. It needs to be a clear-cut upgrade.
Yeah.
When we come back, Falcons coach Raheem Morris has a lot of praise for the interim head coach of the Saints. We'll let you know what to expect from this matchup when we come back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Back here on the Morning Shift, and a reminder in case you missed it, Za'Darius Smith for the Cleveland Browns is now headed to the Detroit Lions. This according to sources who told NFL Media's Ian Rappaport. And, of course, the Lions trying to fill the key hole with the loss of Aiden Hutchinson. And in this trade, Smith and a 2026 seventh are going to Detroit for a 2025 fifth and a 2026 sixth. So Rappaport calls it a major move.
Yeah, it sounds to me like it's basically a fifth rounder that's being moved, and I think that's interesting. I don't know if you guys saw it yesterday. Baron Browning from the Broncos goes to the Cardinals for a sixth rounder in next year's draft. So kind of a little bit of a market developing, and I think teams like the Giants with Ojulari and anybody else out there trying to move some of their young pieces at pass rusher, probably keeping an eye on that. And I think it's worth mentioning that, and Bo, you'll have to help me on this, the Falcons don't have a fifth next year, correct?
Yeah, they lost it for the
over the Kirk Cousins thing.
Yeah, that Mike Florio decided to make a national
make an issue.
And he was very, very, very upset. He's still very upset that it wasn't more.
Yeah.
But that's a him problem.
Yeah. He's been going to bat today, trying to back the decision not to go for two last night. It's like, all right, man, cool. Yeah, that's on you.
He's a clown. I've never understood why he does certain things and makes anything Falcons related, he's gonna despise, go against. But apparently, I'm glad he's got Todd Bowles' back because I think. It was the wrong decision. I don't think it should be something that people use as any kind of case against Todd Bowles. I think he's been a good coach in Tampa.
If y'all had to put money on it, do you think that the Falcons make a move today, period?
I think the phones are going to be ringing all day. I'm just not sure, though, if something gets done because of maybe it seems to be a hotter market these days, and therefore prices could be driven up.
Yeah, I agree.
So we know the Saints are going to see the Falcons on Sunday, and they will be without Dennis Allen, who was relieved of his duties as head coach. Instead, the interim will be Darren Rizzi, who will lead the Saints against Atlanta. And so Coach Raheem Morris, as a member of Squid Nation, reminded us, Chris calling in, saying that Raheem Morris has been in this position before, when Dan Quinn was let go. He took over as the interim head coach of a team. So Morris, he said that when a coach gets fired in that situation, doesn't mean everything they were doing was bad. That's what he had to say about Dennis Allen. But then he went on to say, it's just about applying your message and getting those guys to try to play for you. We know how good of a coach Rizzi is and some of the things he can do. So we better show up ready to go, because we also know what that looks like from the other side.
It's actually a good, I love the fact that you had that quote, because I know personally, and I don't think he would ever say what he did or didn't do, but I know when DQ was let go that there were a few things that Raheem changed, and I think it just kind of cleaned things up inside the building that maybe got the focus back and maybe more in tune. And the team did, they were like, what, they were 0-5 or 6 when they fired DQ, I think, in 2020.
Brutal.
And I know Rod was able to make the team a little more competitive, get some wins out of them. And obviously, you know, the rest is what it is. But it's a good point because there just might be one or two things that Rizzi corrects or changes, maybe is a better way to put it. And it could do a lot for the team. They have gotten in a little bit of a rut. They have gotten some guys back. Now, they are going to be possibly without Olave and Shahid for sure this week. So maybe that'll help the Falcons. But they've gotten healthy in a lot of spots. And we'll see some guys like DeMario Davis that we didn't see last time.
Yeah, and look, I think it's worth mentioning, I've been in this situation where you play under an interim coach. Now, granted, I was in college, and I was playing under a guy named Joe Kynes after Mike Shula was let go. All right, anybody that remembers the halftime interview of the Independence Bowl, man, it was electric. Joe Kynes was coming out there talking about inside trap. But I think a lot of times coordinators in these types of situations are able to breathe life into a team because they have, first of all, they have a lot less stress on their plate. When you talk about coordinator, like they're allowed to kind of have their own persona and show their personality inside of a locker room, and so they're a little bit less weight on their shoulders. There's not as many expectations. They're not so much worried about, you know, what next year is going to bring. They know it might be different or difficult, and so I think the team a lot of times plays hard for these guys, these interim head coaches, and I think they play more free. Right. And I think they play with their backs against the wall and something to prove, obviously. And all of them want a job next season. But I think they also, it's almost like a lighten the mood. It's like, well, this season's not going well. Might as well just play really hard. And I think that's probably the version you'll get this weekend.
I think the building is going to have a lot to say about this game, too. And what Saints fan shows up? And when I mean what, is it the 1990s Saints fans that used to wear the brown paper bags over their face?
No, absolutely not. No.
You don't think so?
No.
Well, look, 7 straight losses, it could be a light crowd. And if it is a light crowd or the energy isn't what it normally is in that building, it could change the way this game is played. Yeah. But if that building is what it has been every time I've stepped foot in it, which to me is it's the best home field advantage in football. I think it's the loudest building in the NFL.
It is loud.
Yeah, Tiff, you know how loud it can be in there. I have been to every stadium other than the Vegas stadium in the NFL. And to me, New Orleans is the loudest when it is rocking.
Mm.
And if that's the building that you walk into, if that's the atmosphere you walk into, then this is not going to be easy. I don't care how bad they've been.
Yeah.
And I go back to what we went to Tampa 2 weeks ago, Mike, and you and I and Tiff, we all talked about this game is not going to be easy. I don't care if they're missing Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. They're still a good football team now. I'm not saying the Saints are a good football team, but it's still an NFC South game. Coaching a staff that somewhat knows who you are. They've already played you once. It's not going to be easy. And you see last night that, you know, Tampa Bay played well. The NFL games are hard, and they're really hard on the road.
All of a sudden, Kate Otten has become Tony Gonzalez down there in Tampa because,
good for us. We're a fantasy team.
Yeah, that's true. And when you back him up with what Travis Kelce's been after Rashee Rice injury, then it's even better because he's on our fantasy team as well. No, I think it bears mentioning. And you know what's funny? I've actually talked about this a number of times. Bama plays LSU this weekend. I've already gotten, you know, a couple of conversations going because they were both on buys this past week about the atmosphere in Baton Rouge. And a lot of those fans are crossover fans for whatever reason. Those are two tough places to play, be it the adult beverages being passed around or whatever it is, the climate around football down in the southern part of that state. It's hard to go play in either one of them. Now, granted, I had success at multiple times in either one, and so there are times when those fans definitely are the bag over the fans, bag over the head type of fans. But I don't think that's what you're going to get this weekend. I don't think the team is so far down that that you'll have the crowd kind of lay off it all. So I think they will. I think they'll stand up and get crunk.
I hope some Falcons fans go.
If the season started off that way for them, which it did not, then you would probably have bags over heads because it would be a whole long stretch run of badness. But it didn't start off that way. So something.
I think they'll be angry. You
know. Well, I will say this: 2-0 was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago, but I think because these Saints fans have tasted better seasons, like, well, you're talking about the 90s fans.
Yeah.
It was a drought for a long time.
There was
long,
some mid-2000s in there, too.
So, I mean, it was bad. It was bleak.
It was weird going through that list a minute ago of all the bad head coaches because you did. I mean, you got Mike Ditka was on there and as far as his stint down with New Orleans. Like, there was a number of coaches we really like going, sheesh, man, why all these NF South teams have had like 2 and 3 on all these lists of bad head coaches? But I just think that those fans down there this weekend are going to be angry. And again, it goes back to the conversation we have at the top of the show. They can run the football. Right, and if they are allowed to run the football on us early in the game, Derek Carr hits a couple play actions. You know, I don't know who he's throwing to with Shakir and Olave out. Right, you'll have to dig up some wide receiver depth. But if he's allowed to do that, and then Taysom Hill comes in goal line, all of a sudden, if you can get the Falcons playing from behind, I think that that plays into the Saints at home because now it's loud. Now you're rushing the passer. Now Kirk's not moving. We didn't run the ball well against them the first time around, and if Alvin Kamara is just shoving it down your throat every other play, you're going to be in for a 12-round fight here, man. There's no doubt about it in my mind.
Yeah, you can't you can't let them get in third and second short because it'll just be easy conversions, and they have and then Derek is it Rizzi? He ain't got nothing to lose. Are they going to do fire him? No, I mean I think that's already done. Unless he somehow
you're
goes
saying the trick plays.
I'm just saying, I don't think there'll be a trick, a fake punt this week. I think they're just going to line up and go for it.
You're going to have Taysom Hill and Spencer Rattler in the backfield with Derek Carr on a couple of plays. Just throw it out. See what happens.
I would think Carr, Taysom, and Kamara. Why not?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we saw it. Tampa had all three running backs in there with Baker Mayfield at one point. So I just don't think there's any you're not gonna coach like you just got the job and you got a 4-year contract as the head coach and you're coaching there is no tomorrow as an interim coach.
Yeah, they're gonna let it all hang out. There's no doubt.
Roster moves aplenty for the Atlanta Braves and a life a squid awaits us when we come back here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game this hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. Oh, do you know anything about Inspector Gadget, Dylan?
Do I? I love Inspector Gadget.
I'm just
so good.
Just one.
I love the movies, 1 and 2. I didn't watch much of the animated series, but.
Oh, you probably weren't bored. Were you even? I don't know.
I just saw the real life, what do they call live action movies?
Yes.
I saw those.
That's not where I was going with it.
Yeah,
different.
That ain't
not
it.
Not the same.
Yeah, that's the cheap version.
Oh, dang. Okay. Yeah.
Going and get you the show.
Man, all right. I'll check out the animated show then. I didn't know I was missing out.
Yeah. We are back with some Braves news. Yesterday, the team announced that they have exercised Marcell Ozuna's option for the 2025 season and declined options on right-handed pitcher Luke Jackson and center Travis d'Arnaud. Additionally, the club reinstated Ronald Acuna Jr., left-handed pitcher Ray Kerr, left-handed pitcher Angel Perdomo, and then your right-hander Spencer Strider as well. So,
yeah, and then Joe Jimenez is going to sit out basically all of 2025 because he had surgery on his cartilage in his left knee, which is huge because I know he had the slight slip up in the what was that doubleheader playing as a playing game, but he was pretty good as a setup man. I mean, he had a 2.62 ERA in 24, and he pitched a career high in innings and in games. So that part, but the Travis d'Arnaud thing is really what the Marcell Ozuna was kind of, you knew you were picking up that option, especially when you traded Soler on, what was it, Thursday? For Canning and who may or may not play, be on the roster. They may not tender him, but the d'Arnaud stuff is huge.
And then Max Fried news as well. So they have tendered a qualifying offer to him.
He will kindly decline.
He will decline. Means they get no compensation thanks if he signs anywhere. But I just, the d'Arnaud stuff is, that was your backup catcher. He's been here forever. He's been a leader on the team. The $8 million, is it too much? You're clearly trying to get some flexibility, financial flexibility, which has been a term that this organization has used quite a bit over the last 10 years. But that's what you're trying to do. So where do you go from here? Is it, you know, is it a situation where Walker Buehler, who the Dodgers did not give a qualifying offer to, is that a guy that you might go after if you can't re-sign Max Fried? Or is some of this because you're thinking you might go after Max Fried? I mean, you also have to upgrade Arcia. What are you going to do at catcher? Drake Baldwin, I think, was one of your – I think he might have been the minor league player of the year last year for the team. I know he had a good year, but he's a young catcher.
Trump, right? Your game plan cannot be Chadwick Trump next year at backup catcher.
Well, no, I think it would be Baldwin. But there's no such thing – but there's really no such thing as a backup catcher, because what it is that it's
– Co-starter.
Pretty much. I mean, you don't do back – if I catch a night game – then you're not going to let me start in a day game the next day. So you know, one of y'all would be starting catcher. That's how this organization kind of rolls with it. That's how a lot of teams do it these days. That's the right way to do it. It's kind of like running backs. You don't have one these days that is the bell cow. Most teams that do it right have two. It's kind of the same thing. You want to save the wear and tear. I actually think that maybe Travis d'Arnaud would come back for less if maybe I'm wrong, but I would like to think that he would. I think that's a guy that wants to be here, and I think a lot of guys want him here. And I almost would kind of think that that Alex has a good plan in place for this. It might be something that they've talked about, but the Jimenez stuff. Now it's a move you're going to go out and find another reliever, because that is not something you've had. You did redo Lopez's contract, Ronaldo Lopez's contract, over the weekend as well.
Yeah.
Yep. That's right. Little W sauce. Breakfast sauce. I will be at the Kennesaw State men's basketball game tonight as they make their debut. I'll be there with my boys from New Realm and Allen Lager. So come on by. Say, hey, you know, join the nation. That's all we can do. Don't forget the Brown Grass Charity Golf Classic, November 25th as well. Get over to the 929 Game website, the events page. There's a lot of ways you can still participate, because we're pretty close to being sold out. Actually, we are sold out. I'm going to go ahead and say it, but you can still go over. If you hit me up, might be able to open a few spots for you. You never know. I can pull strings sometimes, because it is my tournament. Station events, mine. It's my tournament. You know, the only one talks about it's me. It's mine. All right. I have had enough of Tom Brady and what he is and what he isn't as a broadcaster. I have no personal hard feelings towards Tom Brady, but I'm sick and tired of the criticism of him and then complaining when he does what maybe you want him to do and want him to get fined. You know, we all know that he is now a minority owner in the Raiders. He owns stakes, so some of the rules change. He can't be in meetings that Tiff gets to be in when she does NFL games and TV. He can't do any of that with other teams. But something happened in the game he was calling, which was Detroit and Green Bay with Brian Branch, and we'll play the audio, and then I'll tell you what some people are kind of complaining about, the fact that he wasn't fined for saying this.
I don't love that call at all. I mean, obviously it's a penalty, but to me, that has to be serious intent. Again, so much for these guys, and they're going to have to adjust the rest of the game, losing their best defensive player, who I know they were expecting to have a huge day today. Not an easy guy to replace, and Green Bay's got great field position now without having to do too much.
Wow.
He's just giving his opinion, which is what I want a broadcaster to do there.
Yeah, I like it.
But then we get a whole write-up on multiple websites about, well, the NFL owners opt to not fine him, as if they should have fined him for that. I mean, get real. He didn't say the call was crap. He didn't say any of that. He just said, I don't think this. That's okay. We can't get upset if he's and say he's not good and he doesn't do this, and I want to hear that. But then every time he does the things that make broadcasters good, we get mad because he wasn't fined.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he's actually been a lot better than I ever expected him to be. The commercials that kind of build him up as a broadcaster to advertise for the game are a little bit over the top for me.
Yeah,
I don't need to see the, well, Brady's going to be on the call, so you should tune in. Like, that's not what it is. But I realize they're paying him a lot of money for his name and his thoughts, and I understand they have to do that. But if he had not said what he said, that would ring more alarm bells for me in terms of what he is as a broadcaster.
Yeah, I totally agree. We can't have everything the way we want it both ways. Like, let him do his job and stop writing an article every time you think he could be fined for something, because then you're going to write articles about how bad he sucks. So leave the guy alone. Let him do his freaking job. I mean, he's bad enough. He's all in his feelings about his ex.
That'll do it for Life of Squid. We'll find out what's coming up on the Steakhouse next on Sports Radio 99 The Game.
It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, 3-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.